Welcome to KiteLine, a weekly radio program on WFHB that focuses on issues in Indiana's prison system and beyond.
I'm Emma Johnson.
And I'm Mia Beach.
And we're your hosts for this program.
Behind the prison walls, a message is called a kite. Whispered words, a note passed hand to hand, a request submitted to the guards for medical care. Illicit or not, sending a kite means trusting that other people will bear it farther along until it reaches its destination. Here in KiteLine, we hope to share these messages with you across the prison walls.
This week's episode focuses on the impact of both work strikes and hunger strikes within prisons. First, we'll hear some national prison news and learn about the Chicago Community Bond Fund.
The Department of Homeland Security has renewed its contract with the Corrections Corporation of America, or CCA, to continue operating the South Texas Family Residential Center, an immigrant detention center in Dilley, Texas. The center incarcerates most of the country's immigrant mother and child detainees under prison-like conditions. Opened in 2014, the center has been beneficial to CCA. The Department of Homeland Security, according to a recent Washington Post investigation, awarded the company the contract without the standard bidding process. CCA earned 14% of its total 2015 revenue from the center. Immigrant rights activists have strongly criticized the center, and a member of the U.S. House of Representatives, Zoe Lofgren, a Democrat from California, said of it, quote, "For the most part, what I see is a very expensive incarceration scheme. It's costly to taxpayers and achieves almost nothing other than trauma to already traumatized individuals," unquote.
Jails and prisons charge exorbitant rates for phone calls from prisoners. In fact, phone calals from jails and prisons amount to a $1 billion industry. This summer, two states passed legislation attempting to tackle this problem. Illinois passed a bill that cuts in half the cost of phone calls from prison so that all calls from Illinois prisons now cost no more than 7 cents a minute. New Jersey passed a bill that caps rates and addresses international calls by immigrant detainees. Earlier, the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, had decided to regulate the whole prison phone industry. In August, the FCC issued revised phone rates to a maximum of 11 cents a minute from state and federal prisons and a range of 14 to 22 cents for county jails, depending on their size. The FCC also placed severe limits on the number of fees often added to calls.
Children should not be imprisoned, according to a new report from the Annie E. Casey Foundation. The report examines the ineffectiveness of youth prisons and suggests a new direction for the juvenile justice system. Youth prisons, the report says, have high costs. Although the costs of maintaining such prisons vary from state to state, states pay an average of $90,000 a year for every young person in a juvenile facility. The report recommends closing all youth prisons, which have high recidivism and do not improve long-term outcomes. Youth prisons don't protect the community either. Children are incarcerated for low-risk offenses, the report says, and often do not receive the guidance and support they need to get back on track. Sue Aberholden, with the National Alliance of Mental Illness, says some states have begun to send more children into treatment instead of locking them up. She adds that children do not learn much through punishment.
Since the settlement in the lawsuit Ashker versus the governor of California just over a year ago, the number of prisoners in indefinite solitary confinement in California state prisons has dropped by 99%. The state has analyzed approximately 1,557 prisoners as the settlement required, and as a result, 1,532 have been permitted to transfer out of solitary confinement to a less restrictive housing. Most of those transfers have already taken place, and another 12 prisoners are serving determinate solitary confinement terms and have dates set for release from solitary, as opposed to their previously indeterminate terms. Further, the prisoner population in solitary for the long term, 10 or more years, has fallen 99% in California's Pelican Bay prison, from 513 to 5. Those 5 are expected to be released from solitary soon or at least given a release date. It's the prisoners themselves that brought about the end of California's solitary confinement policies. They led 3 hunger strikes, filed the lawsuit, and negotiated the settlement terms.
My name is Max Ducan. I'm a co-founder and current collective member of the Chicago Community Bond Fund. The Chicago Community Bond Fund is a new organization in Chicago. It's been around for about a year, and we post bond for people in Cook County Jail that otherwise couldn't get out of jail because they lack the money. And Cook County Jail is the largest single-site jail in the country, so at any given night there's between 8,000 and 9,000 people sitting there. the majority of whom are sitting there simply because they lack them out of jail. So to date, we've posted bond for 40 people to get out of jail or off of house arrest, and we've paid out close to $200,000 in bonds in a revolving fund. So when the money comes back, Illinois is not a bail bondsman state, so when we post a 10%, we get the majority of those funds back, and so we are able to then maintain a revolving fund. Our ultimate aim, however, is to abolish cash bond in its entirety, which means tackling pretrial detention and also mass incarceration, sort of the carceral state in general. We engage in a lot of different facets, from popular education all the way up to even engaging judges and state sort of more reformist efforts to end pretrial detention, including helping to support a constitutional challenge to Illinois' bond statute, which is going to be filed in the next month. So our collective has a crew of about 10 core members. And then beyond that, we have a wider pool of about 60 people that help with different tasks, from fundraising to supporting people when they get out of jail. Sometimes people need ride support or support or fundraisers for fines and fees associated with their case, or people to just handle intakes and visit people in jail. So we have people helping out in a variety of different capacities, ranging from throwing a house party to raise money to, you know, waiting outside of jail for someone to get out so that they can drive them home. Our genesis, our sort of origin story, was born out of struggle. While we gauge a wide range of tendencies and thinking around abolition and guilt or innocence, we aren't a guilt or innocence-based collective in making criteria on how we bond people out. Whether people are guilty or innocent of their charges bears no bearing on our decision-making process. However, people have different personal feelings about that. I would say the majority of our members, however, were very involved in efforts over the last couple of years to raise money for activists that were arrested at political demonstrations. And 3 weeks after Ferguson, in August 2014, Chicago police killed two young black men in different parts of the city of Chicago on the south and west side. Deshaun Pittman was a 17-year-old Southside resident who was killed by Chicago police. And several days later, his friends and family held a vigil to sort of remember him and mourn his loss to their community. The Chicago police attacked it. They kicked over his candles, ripped down memorial posters, and arrested nine people. Five of these people, because they were alleged that people fought back. This was 3 weeks after Ferguson. People were allegedly yelling F-12 and throwing branches and bricks. Some people in defense after people were already, the vigil was disrupted violently by the police. And so five of the nine people that were arrested were charged with very serious felonies, ranging from attempted murder of a police officer and mob action, all the way down to felony aggravated battery of a police officer. And so we had to raise over $30,000 to get everyone out of jail. And so this effort was a four-month collaboration of family members and friends of people that were in jail, of these five people facing charges from this vigil, and outside activists like myself. I had just come back from doing legal support work in Ferguson during the Ferguson uprising. I was very inspired, particularly by the ideas of people fighting back against police violence. And so support, you know, we made contact with family members and friends who are already doing their own fundraising efforts and supplemented what they were doing. And through these efforts, sort of, we were like, why don't we create a revolving fund so we don't have to, you know, people have to spend 4 months in jail. These funds can be on hand already and limit the negative consequences of pretrial detention, how it affects people's lives, ranging from, you know, losing your house, losing your job, losing custody rights. So much, and even just a few days in jail, your life can be severely altered in a completely preventable way. So why don't we have a revolving fund that's on hand? So now we do. And since that time, we've posted bond, I believe, for seven activists that have been arrested at political demonstrations, and the rest are people that are still obviously political cases, just, you know, in the nature of their relationship to the state and the police and neighborhoods that people live in. No one who's been arrested at a political demonstration, particularly with the local Black Lives Matter movement, has had to sit in jail. Within 24 hours of their bond being set, we've been able to either post some funds we've already had or fundraise additional funds to get people out of jail. And so we haven't lost any bonds yet. It's kind of a miracle that I can't believe that we haven't lost any bonds yet. We've gotten 7 bonds back. So these funds then get recycled so that we can continue posting bonds for additional people in the future. People can check out our website at www.chicagobond.org. People can fundraise to support our efforts. I know that people can get involved with efforts locally. There are bond funds that are already in existence in New York City at the Brooklyn Community Bail Fund and the Bronx Freedom Fund. There's the Bay Area Anti-Repression Committee out in San Francisco that does work, particularly on activists that get arrested at demonstrations and other actions. And Massachusetts has a bond fund as well. And there are bond funds sort of popping up all over the place. And we urge people, you know, while we support the creation of bond funds, we do urge people that the end game has to be that we're working ourselves out of a job, that we're not content for this project to last more than a year or two longer. We want pretrial detention to be eradicated. We want cash bond to be abolished. So we're working. We encourage people when they're supporting their efforts to have that eye on the prize and everything they do, move them to a place where we're increasing our strength to be able to end these horrific abuses in the legal system.
James Kilgore is a former anti-imperialist urban guerrilla who fought in the U.S. and, while in exile, organized against the apartheid regime in South Africa. After capture and extradition to the U.S., he served 6.5 years in prison and now teaches at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Next up is an interview between Kilgore and two recently released Black Panther prisoners, Robert King and Albert Woodfox. King and Woodfox, along with the late Herman Wallace, were known as the Angola Three, each serving decades in solitary confinement due to their role in organizing other prisoners at the infamous Angola prison in Louisiana.
To go on a hunger strike, if you want to go on a hunger protest in prison, that is the voice of the prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
Going on a hunger strike, because you could file a petition, you could say anything you want to say, but the voice of the prisoner is the hunger strike, because they hear that. You know, and they hear that because you create a situation that is conflicting with prison rules and disciplinary rules and institutional rules. It creates a situation that they consider, in my opinion, hazards to them in a sense of publicity.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll do their best to try to, suppress this.
That's
but
right.
The only weapon that a person has is in prison, and the biggest voice that they got.
Most
because there are a lot of other things you have to consider too, because they're considering the fact that they have to report after 72 hours. They have to make individual reports of every individual who's on fast. That's the way they did it there. And then after that, they have to take you. They
have
to bring you to the hospital,
the
notify. Well, and they have to notify medical hospital, also doctors to come in.
Uh-huh.
I mean, these are things that they have to do. And the longer it goes, the more potent this thing becomes. The longer it goes. So that is a good tool. That is the only tool.
Most effective tool that prisoners have is hunger strike. But it's so brutal. It takes such a toll on you. And before that, guys just cut themselves, cut their wrists, cut their heels and stuff like it there, you know. But it became very costly for the institution, you know. But the hunger strike is probably the most effective tool prisoners have, but it's so brutal. It comes at such a high cost. But as King said there, you know, they create situations and where you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
You're going to be able to get up and look yourself in the mirror the next day, you know.
You got to keep going.
Yeah. And we usually always try to resolve issues without, resorting to hunger strike. We do petitions and stuff and send. We give them like 2 weeks. And
so did you all do a lot of hunger strikes to Angola 3?
Yeah, but the longest we did was 45 days.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, at that time, they used to put our food on the, bring the trays on the chair and put them on the floor and slide them under the door. And we wanted them to cut food slots in the bar so they could sit. So it has a long history because we didn't eat for 45 days. And then we made a compromise because we had to eat, some of the guys were, including myself, were getting really in bad shape. So they agreed that we could hold our trades and eat through the bars, and they would cut the food slots in the bars eventually. We ate through the bars 18 months before they started cutting the bars. And then when they did, you know, they say, necessity is the mother of creation. So eventually guys started making it. King made the first one, these little shelves made out of cardboard and string where you could still stand there holding the tray. You could
set
the tray
right on the shelf. Oh, yeah, sure,
yeah, everybody picked up on that. And but that lasted 18 months. And then when they finally did come to cut, since our tier, we was on a D tier, was the strongest tier, and A tier was the strongest tier. That's where Harmon was. The other two tiers pretty much caved in. But we stayed on the hunger strike until we were able to force that compromise. And they made sure that we were the very last tier, the tier King and I was on, that they cut the bars. And then they cut all of them but four. They were so determined to make guys pull their trades under that door again, you know. But because of the level of conscience that had been created on the tier, you know, King, myself, and a couple other guys even offered to trade cells with, you know, guys, so they could be in the cell with the food slot, and you know, we would be in the cell and still eat through the bars off the trades. We had a, you know, but the guys said, "Nah, we see, we know what's going on here," you know. So after about a month or so, we went before the board and we told them, "Either you cut the rest of the cell, or we're going on a hunger strike again." And so they made like they didn't know, you know, like, "What you mean, cut the rest of the hunger, you know, rest of the bar? We still got four cells on our tier. You didn't cut, you know, you say you ran out of material."
Yeah.
So,
you know. So what year was that?
When it was in the 80s, huh?
Yeah, that was around
early 80s, somewhere. Yeah.
Well, no, it was more like, because I went to Camp James 79.
79,
and we
so
did all this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we did all this. We studied all this before Camp James.
Yeah.
So that
probably
was like 78 by 75.
Yeah. So, but you couldn't labor strike because you were locked down all the time, right? You never had jobs.
We did support. I've always been a supporter of organized labor, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
These right to light laws, I think, are the worst, probably some of the worst legislation that's ever been passed.
Oh, the right to work stuff, yeah.
Yeah, the right to work laws, you know. They virtually get all the benefits of the organized labor, you know, and they don't have to do anything.
Right. You know? No sacrifice but minute.
Yeah.
But you get the gain, yeah. So we'll see how it seems like the thing went well in Holman yesterday from what I've heard. But I don't know about, I haven't heard much about other prisons. I know there's some in South Carolina. You heard Nationwide?
I heard the person got word, I think Nationwide, that it went well.
And I know there's been a lot of solidarity actions in the streets around the country.
Yeah.
Small towns, cities.
But the people have become there.
Right.
The people on the outside,
chain, you know,
on the outside, the people
binds all the prisons together, you know.
Yeah. So it's amazing. I mean, the support they've got.
They can't isolate prison by prison by prison.
Now it's a movement. I mean, the support that came to you, then to the Pelican Bay hunger strikers.
Yeah.
I mean, it all builds up into something
that's.
You can see this thing is. This is an amazing event. I mean, the people that are here.
Yeah.
I mean, we could never have something like this 3 or 4 years ago, even. You know?
Yeah.
You have this, and you get 40 or 50 people. You know? Now you have hundreds
now
of people.
Now we have to worry about the comeback.
Now we hear briefly about hunger and work strikes from Sekou Kambui, a longtime Black Liberation prisoner who recently won his freedom. A full-length interview with him will be aired in an upcoming episode.
Is there a tradition, a history of like strikes and hunger strikes in the Alabama prison system?
Long years ago, we did a lot of work strikes because there were more work. People were working on the plantation, like situation on corn and cotton and sugar cane and you name it.
And when would that have been?
In the 60s and 70s. But in the early 70s, we began to create a hostile environment where the farm labor was concerned. You know, we would go out and we might work, say, from this table to the front table, and that's the end of that period. We're going in and come back. And when we come back out, we might work from this to that again, and it's time to go back in. So the length of the rows was such that that amount of work was insufficient to provide with what they needed or hoped for or wanted out of us. But what I used to talk to the fellas about is that as long as we're moving, so we take a baby step and a baby step and a baby step, as long as we were moving, then we couldn't be locked up. We couldn't be accused of refusing to work, so nobody gets rolled up. But we achieved the goal of destroying the economy that is based on our labor. In more recent years, just before I left, from time to time they might be hired by a private company to grow tomatoes, grow peas, and they get paid 10, 15 cents a day and for their labor. And I guess the Department of Corrections would get the rest. They had got to the point where they were converting work releases into work camps, sending people to work release, but they weren't allowed to have a real job and make money. They were sent out to do.
So it's the old convict leasing system.
Yeah.
Reworked, yeah.
And so, you know, some people enjoy the opportunity and, you know, the freedom that that kind of atmosphere give them. But some of us just find it that it's slave labor, slave labor. Was a little bit of slave labor, a lot of slave labor. It's still slave labor. So, you know, we went into it with a kind of mind and spirit that I'm not going to be used like this, you know. So I do just what I need to do to keep you from being in a position to cause me any harm. You know, I'm working.
So at that time in the 60s and 70s, was it the situation that almost everybody that was in the prison was working in the fields?
Yeah, pretty much. You would say, I used to argue in my classes that, you know, the state of Alabama, who is who we work for as an incarcerated person, I stopped calling them inmates, and I got individuals to understand that we are incarcerated people, not inmates. Inmates are people who are mentally sick and are sent to an asylum, and they call you an inmate. So I'm not an inmate. I'm not mentally imbalanced. And so, therefore, I'm simply an incarcerated person fighting to be free.
Three 300 people imprisoned in the Santa Clara County Jail in California went on hunger strike on October 17th. Their demands include an end to solitary confinement, the provision of adequate clothes to prisoners, and an end to the profiteering off the commissary system. In their call, they emphasize the need for outside support. Quote, "Now our plan of action is to inspire, enlighten, and unite as many Santa Clara County prisoners as possible in order to engage in a peaceful protest in the form of an organized hunger strike. In addition, we are reaching out to Prison Law Office in Silicon Valley Debug and other outside agencies and individuals for assistance and support, so we are not alone and we have a voice from the outside," end quote. 6 days later, the prisoners suspended their strike after the sheriff agreed to lower commissary prices, provide additional clothing, and release many of the strikers from solitary. Despite a sense of victory characterized by, quote, "handshakes and hugs," end quote, the prisoners clarified that they would resume the strike if the concessions were not implemented in a timely fashion. The Free Alabama Movement is a mass organization inside Alabama's prisons who have organized a series of strikes inside Holman Prison and were key in the national prison strike that began on September 9th. We close this episode with the Free Alabama Movement's recently released theme song. Our streets! Our streets! Our streets!
Today at about 3 p.m., there was an attempted break from our adjustment center, which is our maximum security facility. George Jackson was killed as he broke and ran outside the adjustment center.
Well, I could die tomorrow, but there'll be 200 or 300 people to take my place.
This is one black man they're not going to murder and sweep under the rug, unless they murder me, too.
This is for those who forgotten our name. Those names forgotten remain the same, though. Roam to and fro through the slums. Overcome, we've overcame. So throughout this testimony, they shall remember our name. Graduated from whip and chain, psychologically drained and scarred. Prison bar, however, our breed remains. Tribulation burns and will be impurred by fire. Oppressed long before leaving the suckling of our mother breast. Unlike public broadcast, but this is more than a simple test. This is a fight for survival, a fight that's more than a battle. This is war, so ask yourself, what do you stand for? The projects, the law, the welfare, prison bars, that scarred the people of color. There's no other whose turmoil has lasted such long. Don't we prove to be battle tested? Our breed is original. Our breed is strong. Keep holding on, stand the course. For we have comrades in line to bear the torch. Remember, learn the rules before leaving the porch.
And we begin at 5 with breaking news involving a man convicted of murder as a teenager and sentenced to life in prison.
He's the first to get a second chance thanks to a decision by the state's highest court.
Ruled that it is cruel and unusual punishment to sentence a juvenile to mandatory life without parole.
In the meantime, everyone agrees there's certain to be continued overcrowding and more violence.
I know in Alabama, just like in a lot of states, it was a 3 strikes and you're out type thing. And so our prison population has just dramatically increased over the last 20 years.
We asked men who had recently been released from prison about the conditions.
It's harder to keep clean when you got all the people in there like that.
Did you have that place? Was it crowded?
Yes, sir. About every day, it was a stabbing, biting, cutting.
Every day you saw things like that?
Yes, every day.
Next, Alabama's prison system at a breaking point. The state currently packs more than 24,000 inmates into a system designed to house about half that number.
But the truth is, if we've got thousands of people in jail who don't need to be there, and we haven't found the courage yet to get them out.
Our prisons are at double capacity. That is not a safe situation for the correction officers or the inmates.
We're not ex-convicts, we're not ex-offenders, we're not ex-felons. Don't classify us. We are people with felony convictions, people that have paid their debt to society, people.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad.
This has been Kiteline. Anyone affected by the prison system in any form is welcome to write us via our P.O. Box, Kiteline Radio, P.O. Box 2422, Bloomington, Indiana, 47402. Kiteline wants your feedback. You can reach us via email at kitelineradio@gmail.com or find us on Facebook. Are you or someone you care about affected by the prison system? You can call us to record a message or share a story to be played on the air at 812-269-2517. Or you can use this number to record a message to a loved one. You can find previous episodes of Kiteline or more information on our stories at kitelineradio.noblogs.org. Kiteline is intended as a means of communication between people across the prison walls. We are not responsible for all views expressed on the program. WFHB, its contributors, or any affiliates airing this program are not responsible for the views expressed on the show. This has been Kiteline. Join us every Friday at 5:30 p.m. to hear more stories, news, and insights about Indiana's prison system and its impact on our communities. Thank you for listening.